And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Governor Mike Dunleavy has named Stephen J. Cox to be Alaska's next attorney general. Cox is a member of the Federalist Society, a conservative legal organization, and has experience in the private and public sector. During his first term, President Donald Trump appointed Cox in 2020 to be the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Texas. Most recently, Cox was senior vice president for Bristol Bay Industrial, a subsidiary of Bristol Bay Native Corporation. In a statement, Dunleavy said Cox, quote, has demonstrated a wide breadth of experience and steadfast dedication to the rule of law. Cox's appointment is subject to approval by the Alaska legislature, which is set to gavel into its next session in January. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel co-chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee. He says Cox appears to be a new face in Alaska's legal community, and he hopes the new attorney general is aware of the state's unique challenges, particularly in rural Alaska.
Where, you know, there's a real dearth of law enforcement, where a substantial portion of the government services people need are delivered through tribes. And tribal law in Alaska is different than in most other states.
Cox is board president of the Thomas More Classical School, a new private Christian school in Anchorage set to open next year. Keel says that as state courts weigh the legality of using public dollars for private schools, Cox may face additional scrutiny.
I suspect that there will be more than one legislator who is interested in the designee's connection to that.
Cox said in a statement that he's worked on Alaska issues since 2011, and quote, the duties are broad, but the role of the attorney general begins and ends in Alaska and with its people, end quote. Cox replaces Treg Taylor, who announced his retirement earlier this month. Taylor, Dunleavy's third attorney general, is widely expected to be a Republican candidate for governor. Cox is set to start his position Friday, Taylor's last day. The Juneau Police Department released the body-worn camera footage today of a violent arrest by an officer in late July. The video was released just a day after the officer resigned from his position. KTOO Clarice Larson has more. And a warning, this story contains audio of that arrest.
On July 30th, a Juneau police officer slammed a man to the ground during an arrest. The man was medevaced out of town for a head injury. Juneau Police Chief Derek Boss says the officer's conduct during the arrest did not align with the Juneau Police Department's policy or values.
I do not believe this incident is reflective of JPD and who we are. I think this is more of an isolated event.
The department released the footage in compliance with a new ordinance passed by the Juneau Assembly this spring. It mandates the department must release body-worn camera footage no more than 30 days after a city police officer's actions cause serious injury. This is the first time the ordinance has been invoked. The officer's name is Brandon LeBlanc. He started working for JPD last fall. The department placed him on paid administrative leave following the arrest. He resigned on Thursday. City Manager Katie Kester says his resignation reflects the seriousness of what occurred.
I think that what we would just want to underscore and acknowledge is how painful this event has been for our community.
She says the arrest has prompted a larger review of policing in Juneau. The city is internally investigating the incident. It plans to co-host a community dialogue with the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska about the community's relationship with law enforcement.
We have an obligation to uphold the standards that our community expects from us. And that doesn't mean just, you know, doing an investigation and reviewing the facts, but it means following up with our community and having that conversation.
A video taken by a witness of the arrest circulated widely online last month and prompted a protest of the officer's actions. The video showed LeBlanc attempting to handcuff a man before slamming him to the ground. The man, whose family has publicly identified him as Christopher Williams Jr., appeared to lie unconscious for the remainder of the video and was later medevaced out of town with a head injury. The body-worn camera footage released on Friday showed the incident from multiple perspectives and includes audio. In the video, the man does not appear to comply when LeBlanc asks him to put his hands behind his back.
Put your hands behind your back. I'm not going to tell you again. You're about to get slammed. Put your hands behind your back.
The video shows the aftermath of the body slam. LeBlanc then describes his actions to another officer as a, quote, suplex-type maneuver. A suplex is a move in sports wrestling. LeBlanc worked as an officer in Louisiana before Juneau. While there, court documents show that a man sued LeBlanc in 2016 for excessive force and battery, among other accusations. A jury found LeBlanc not guilty. Following the arrest, the Juneau department requested an independent investigation by an external agency to review LeBlanc's use of force, which is still ongoing. It also announced that the department will participate in cultural sensitivity training. The family of the injured man says he plans to sue the department. Chief Boss says the department is committed to working with the community to grow transparency and trust following the incident.
I would say, you know, moving forward from this, obviously we can always learn and do better. And if we don't, that's a fault. So our intention is to look at this and say, how can we become better partners with the community and what does that look like?
Once the external investigation is finished, the state's Office of Special Prosecutions will review the case to determine if LeBlanc was justified in his response. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And after a week of deliberation, the jury continues to consider the evidence in the sexual assault trial against a former Juneau chiropractor. As of Friday afternoon, the jurors have yet to return a verdict. 12 former patients accused Jeffrey Fultz of sexual assault under the guise of medical care. They say the incidents took place during medical treatment appointments between 2014 and 2020, when he was employed at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium in Juneau. Fultz's defense argued that he was offering legitimate medical care to these patients. The jury has been deliberating 13 counts of sexual assault and one count of sexual harassment against Fultz. Jury deliberations follow standard working hours and will resume Tuesday after Labor Day. There's no time limit on how long a jury can deliberate. If the jury convicts Fultz on any of the counts, there'll be a sentencing hearing. That's when Judge Wolford will determine Fultz's penalty for these convictions. Convictions in sexual assault cases can lead to years in prison. And a small number of Alaska Native craftspeople in Southeast hunt sea otters to use as material for their work. But they say that's become more time-consuming and expensive in recent years, as local tanneries have shut down. As KFSK's Hannah Weaver reports, many hunters now either ship to their sea otter skins out of state or learn to tan themselves.
Anu Tain Deborah Head hunches over a dark piece of sea otter hide, showing a student how to make a trapper's hat.
You've got a nightmare of fluff going on here.
Head came from the town of Craig on Prince of Wales Island to run this skin sewing workshop in Petersburg this July. She hunted these sea otters herself, but she doesn't know how to tan the hide, the process that turns animal skin and fur into a workable material for sewing.
I wish that I could have said, Grandma, show me how to tan it so the hide doesn't fall off of it. I didn't, and that's lost to me.
So instead, she ships her hides to Moyle Mink and Tannery in Idaho. It's the only tannery outside of Alaska licensed for sea otter tanning. They charge $97 per hide plus shipping, which can cost a lot coming from rural Alaska. It then takes about 9 months to get the pelts back. Several Alaska tanneries have closed in recent years, so sending the pelts out of state is one of the only options for craftspeople like Head. She used to send her hides to Rocky Pass Tannery in the village of Cake on Kuprinoff Island. Scott Jackson was the owner and operator there for about a decade, but a year and a half ago, he shut the tannery down.
Just the demand of wanting to keep everybody happy, you know, and sometimes you can't. So pretty soon it becomes stress, and pretty soon it becomes unhealthy.
At one point, Jackson said they tanned 187 hides in a month with fewer than a dozen employees. He says it just got to be too much. Tanning is a long, complicated process. The sea otter skins are hung, dried, shaved, and chemically treated, and that's just the half of it.
It takes a lot more than you realize to make a good, soft, supple sewing hide.
As local tanneries close down, it leaves craftspeople like Head with a couple options. They can try and tan themselves or ship to the two main remaining tanneries in Anchorage or Idaho. Like Head, Kutink Heather Duville is from Craig and ships her skins to Idaho. She first started skin sewing at 8 years old with scraps from a deer her dad had hunted.
You know, I had not worked with leather before, you know, as a little kid, but I used the scraps to sew a matching regalia for my Barbie. And so we both had the same buckskin dress, and I made her a dress and a headband and belt.
When she was a bit older, she took classes from Head. Now, Duville spends most of her time hunting and sewing. She says it's especially meaningful to her to help reduce the booming otter population, whose rising numbers have been threatening shellfish. She tried to tan pelts herself at one point, but felt they weren't high enough quality for sewing. That's why she chooses to ship to Idaho. Plus,
if I were to hunt and tan my own pelts, I would have a big stack of pelts, but no time to convert them and sell them.
She hunted 200 otters last year and about 120 this year. She says she stopped hunting this year because she ran out of money.
For me, it's not just an investment as far as money goes. It's your time. And I think that's why we have so few hunters out there, in addition to the blood quantum limitations through the federal agencies.
Federal rules restrict sea otter hunting to those who are a quarter or more Alaska Native or an enrolled member of a coastal tribe. Despite the barriers, Duville remains committed to hunting and sewing as a way to connect to her culture. Jackson, the former tannery owner, says that teaching sewing and tanning is necessary to keep the tradition going.
That's one of your most sustainable assets right now is teaching our people and our kids and our communities how to sew. You know, I think tanning would be number one, and teaching them how to sew is number two. Say we got to open up our minds a little bit and say, let's have a tannery in every community, even if it's just benefiting the people that are working there, you know.
While he's not sure if he'll reopen the tannery in Cake, Jackson says he'd like to go to other towns and teach people how to set up a sustainable tannery. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Weaver.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 71 degrees and sunny this afternoon. It looks like we might get a bit of rain tonight. There's a 20% chance. Tomorrow looks like it'll clear up throughout the day. And by Sunday, it looks like it'll be pretty warm and sunny again with a high of 67 degrees. Labor Day looks like we'll get a high of 72 and sun. You're listening to KTOO. For more news, go to ktoo.org. It's just about 4:58.